Welcome to Nota Bene, the only art podcast brought to you exclusively by
Will Shant. He is a big friend of the pod and the most exciting jewelry designer out and about in Manhattan right now. You can get some really sick chains or Jesus pieces, whatever you want. You can get custom stuff or buy what he has available. I know that he's selling to musicians some really insanely awesome downtown figures. And plus, he just made a piece for friend of the pod, past guest, Ellie Rhines.
And I hear, Nate, that for my birthday coming up in a couple weeks, you're getting me a Star of David chain.
It is your birthday in a few weeks, and I'm getting you a Star of David
chain. I cannot wait for that. So everyone, go check it out. Will Shott.
www.willshott.com. Shott is S-H-O-T-T.
Welcome back to Nota Bene.
We're live from New York City, where there is a lot going on in town. Though no art fairs, no auctions, which is
really wonderful. Fucking God, man. I'm a mess. I'm exhausted. I need to like go for a health holiday in Germany or Switzerland or one of those places
where
you can go and take the waters.
Where did Kippenberger used to go to dry out every few months? I want to go there.
I don't know. Vols, maybe? That's the only place I've been to, but maybe probably not. There's all sorts of kind of like spas up in the Swiss countryside, up in the mountains, like in Chalets. We just have like soup for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the same thing in Malibu. You can go, it's called the ranch, where it's more of an Americanized hippie version. We go for like 14-mile hikes and also eat nothing but like vegetable soup for a week. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be great. It's like you can lose like a couple inches off the waist, no problem. 10 grand a week seems like it's worth it to me. That just seems reasonable. Is that insane?
10 grand to lose 10 pounds or 3 grand to eat carbone on the beach? I don't know. Which would you do?
I'm going to lose 10 pounds. I've had carbone. Guess what? Fucking spicy rigatoni in the humidity in Miami Beach, to me, is not a match made in heaven.
Well, they got, you know, 1,000 people to pay $3,000.
Well, listen, yeah, a whole bunch of NFT collectors out in Miami. That's kind of like, that's what's become the audience for the carbone boys, I think. Mm.
Well, you'd love to see it.
Yeah, mazel tov on their success. You know, I remember when they had Torsi Italian Specialties, incredible little restaurant. Now it's a different thing. I don't hate. I'm not a hater.
We're not hating. We're not hating on the NFT. Well, a little bit on them, but not on the Carbone Boys.
100% hating on the NFTs. Mm-hmm. What's going on, man? It's hot out. New York it's beautiful, but like, you know, can't get on the subway. You're going to get shot.
I know. I was on the subway yesterday. I might never take it again now. You're just going to get shot.
Where were you going on the subway?
I was going to a certain fashion show that happened in the financial district yesterday.
Oh, should we kick it off with that? Let's start with that.
Let's start with that. Balenciaga, first show in America in 20 years. It was the fashion event of the year, I would say. I mean, I'm not a fashion person, but the fashion people I know say that. And I was in attendance, which was really, really special. Dean Kissick, a friend of the pod, called it the most important cultural event of his entire life.
I'm not going to schlep down to Wall Street at 11:30 on a Sunday.
Oh, you would have gone if you got the invite.
Maybe. I had soccer with the kids. So probably not, actually. I was happy to look at it in the gram. Looked incredible. At least the first half looked incredible. You know, I love the wonderful feeling of seeing a fashion show go down on the floor of Wall Street after a historic fucking bear week. The markets are absolutely falling to pieces and you have a bunch of cultural dilettantes parading up and down in gimp suits. It kind of caught the vibe shift, that's for sure.
Certainly. I mean, it's, you know, Demna's just like got impeccable timing, clearly. But it was a great scene. You know, it was really like a third famous rappers, a third editors at glossy magazines, and a third artists, really. You know, the artists in attendance were, you know, Anna Imhoff was there, Jacqueline Humphreys was there, who else? The Rena Spalling's galleries.
Emily
Sunblad was there. Who else was there? Josh Klein was there. Al Freeman was there. Just a lot of artists.
It was a who's who of artists. I mean, Demna obviously has connections there. And then you had the world's greatest artist, perhaps ever in all of history, was in attendance, dressed seasonably appropriate for a 90-degree day in full head-to-toe leather, right?
Kanye was in the building, yes. I mean, I couldn't imagine pulling that fit off in 95-degree New York heat, but he looked cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, who is he with? Did you see who is, like, what was his posse looking like?
He came sans posse. He was really just there for Demna. He was sitting next to my boss, Anna Wintour. you know, and very close to.
There was a murderer's row there, so you had, we're going to miss a couple of them, but it was Shanisha from Chloe. Karma and Chloe, obviously. His
Offset from
wife.
The Migos was Migos. Next to
Oh, is that who that Shanisha? Was? Okay, and then Anna, and then Kanye, and I forget on the other side. It was
the
a really...
Pusha T was next to them. Yeah, it was a really fun lineup right there.
Now, did you get a seat in the front row, or were you in the standing crowd?
There was just one row that snuck around. I ended up actually standing next to a row just because I needed to write stuff down. I didn't want to just like get in everyone's way. But I was standing in the front row, and I had like a really great, you know, view of everything that was going down, both the crowd and the insane show.
Yeah, it made for some fantastic social media content. Obviously, Mel Ottenberg, king of it all, like just had the best content of the show.
Mel and I were hanging out before the show a little bit. He, in a genius move, had hired Daniel Arnold, another goat, to shoot the show. And so Daniel and I were hanging out before and, you know, just going around snapping some pics. Clandestino regular Dev Hines was there talking to the guy from Slipknot, which was really fun.
The guy from Slipknot was there?
Yeah, the guy from Slipknot was there.
Man, 2022 is shaping up to be quite a fucking year, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it was just wacky all around.
When
dude.
The inside becomes the outside and the outside becomes the inside, it's all topsy-turvy.
Exactamundo. So it was a great way to kick off
It was
Sunday.
Certainly better than that fucking cursed teddy bear show you went to, that's for sure. Less it's said about that fucking hack, the better. Anyway, so I missed out on that. That's okay. You were also, I believe, were you upstate for the Dia benefit, maybe?
I was, yeah. Lucy and I went upstate just for the day. We ran out of the house the weekend, but we went up. The Dia benefit was gorgeous. I'd never actually been before. I know that it's been a tradition. I guess they haven't done it since before the pandemic, but a big, gorgeous lunch inside the former Nabisco factory that Michael Govan discovered while tooting around on his plane, if you recall that story.
Yeah, I've been once ages ago. It's really nice because it's a lunch on Saturday, which I think is super classy and in keeping with
the
sophistication of Dia. Also, their location, which I think upstate sites really best during daylight hours.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to be out there during the day. The food was spectacular because there's so much fresh Hudson
the
Valley greenery.
Of the Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure.
Plus some spectacular local wines and beers. I mean, you know, I do live up there part-time, so I'm... familiar with the glory that is the Catskills in the Hudson Valley, but a lot of people aren't. And I think they were really blown away.
It looked really nice. Pretty glad I didn't go, but looked really, really, really glad other people had a nice time. Although I obviously support Dia, a fantastic board of directors up there. Was Texas represented at the event?
I did see some Texas collectors
there.
That's
what I like to hear. Those are my people. I had a less active time. And then you also, speaking of benefits, which ones were you at last week? You were definitely at the MoMA PS1 benefit, honoring, among other people, Diane of all nonprofits, Aggie Gund, as well as friend of the pod, Rashid Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Aggie got up and gave some remarks, which is pretty rare given her advanced age and also just the fact that she doesn't have to because she's Aggie Gund. But she is just so indebted to everything that PS1 has done to the city. She's been, you know, I think chair of the board or ex facto chair of the board for decades. And she was just really instrumental in helping, Klaus during his term, and then before that, Alana Heiss when she was the director. And Rashid gave a really great toast too. It was just a really, really swell event. It was the first time they ever had it at the museum, which was cool. Just ton of artists showed up, a ton of great people.
Who was it catered by?
It was catered by the great Mina Stone, who has a restaurant in PS1 called Mina's. And it was fantastic. The food was spot on, so great, just like great Greek like staples. Very, very simple, very delicious. Even if you're just in Long Island City, the best place to eat is Mina's. Like, you just go by the museum, have some lunch. It's great.
Yeah. I have to say, that was one that I kind of, as I saw it unfold, I wish I hadn't declined my invitation, because that looked pretty fun. Aggie Gund, like, perhaps the most important New York City cultural benefactor of the last 25 years. I wish she did in selling a couple of her pictures and then taking that money and not putting it back into the art organizations that she's already supported so good, but putting it into social justice causes. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's remarkable.
She sold Roy Lichtenstein's masterpiece to friend of the pod, Stevie Cohen.
Let's go, Mets.
Well, she sold it for $100 million and put that into criminal justice reform.
Yeah, it's fucking incredible.
It's just amazing, yeah.
Speaking of lunches, a lunch neither of us were invited to, but that we spotted on the ground, both of us, which looks like probably the lunch of the auction season.
Truly.
Let me give you this fucking murderous road lineup. Let me know if I forget anyone. The one, the only, Mr. Larry Gagosian.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the great now Los Angeles-based artist
Jordan Wolfson, who joined the stable of the Gagosian Gallery earlier this year.
Joined by his other major New York gallery, David Zwerner's son, Lucas Zwerner, heir apparent.
I've heard this is the first time they had ever broken bread.
That makes sense. I believe Jamie and Julian Villani, sort of friend of the pod, was there. And Ralph DeLuca. Did I leave anyone out?
I think that was the crew. And where did they go, Ben?
I believe they went to Keen's Steakhouse.
That's not true.
No.
They went to Peter Luger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Larry had to hit the ATM to get some cash to pay for that because they don't take cards there.
No, they don't unless you have that Luger card.
Wow. Well, he might. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Jordan got Larry to schlep over to Brooklyn, you know?
That's absolutely. Was Jordan the one that was the impetus? Do we know that? Is it just a conjecture?
Jordan put it to me that he said that he put this crew together. I heard from other attendees that they put it together. I don't know the story. It's okay. Lunch happened. It looked glorious.
I would love to be a fly on the wall at the table of that lunch. Not that there are any flies in Peter Luger, mind you. absolutely incredible. I mean, Jamie really for me is the wild card there. I think she must have added a certain extra spice to that table.
I know. I didn't attend this gala on Saturday, but did you see any video from the performance?
Performance Space NYC.
Yeah.
Who knows what they do? No one's ever been there, but the gala looked incredible.
It looked insane, and Jamin gave a performance that looked really out of this world.
I was trying to figure out, do you think that performance was actually on the schedule, or is that an impromptu?
No idea.
Okay. It could go either way. Either would be believable, though, correct?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, it could have been just impromptu, and everyone's like, okay, this is happening.
Yeah, that was incredible. If you don't know what we're talking about, well, this isn't the podcast for you. Yeah, so that was a lunch. I guess we should probably just briefly talk. I know you're bored by the auctions.
Unless there's
a $200 million Warhol on the block, you just don't even care.
No, I couldn't care less. I mean, I just got some previews for London, and I'm like, I am not tuning into this show.
It's too much. So last week, I guess we can skip over the auctions. There were some auctions. I went. But it was a busy week. The art fairs, man, or art fair singular this go around. Mm-hmm. Frieze was back. In their somewhat cursed new location, but it works out because for me, I like it. It's a bite-sized art fair.
It's small, which is really nice. And, you know, I was a little tired afterward, as you are after any fair, but I wasn't like, I need to like, you know, get a massage and like not see anyone for 24 hours tired.
No, I didn't feel as though my soul was dripping out of my eyes, which is often the case. Mm-hmm. And so that's a win for me. Did some okay business. There were some things to buy, not a ton to buy.
Right.
Stand-up booths included, I'd say Sadie Coles looked really great with a Jordan Wolfson sculpture on the outside and a couple of really nice Alex DeCorte as a neon piece and a video piece, a very collectible video piece. I found Karma looked great with a selection of their
really
things. Kind of going through my head. Those Albert Olin paintings were absolutely
really
incredible.
Nice.
Four paintings priced at around 1.5 euros each on the booth of the Gagosian Gallery. And a special edition that Albert did, or not an edition, I shouldn't say, but a special event was his.
It was like an event. So he commissioned a soft drink purveyor in Germany to make something he calls cough tea, which is a mixture of coffee and tea that doesn't really taste that great, but my lord, does it caffeinate a motherfucker. Sorry, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, it was in a great, super chic, like, Euro-style vending machine with the Robart arm. You had to get a special token from the Gagosian Gallery, which I thought I saved, but now can't find it.
God damn it.
My kid definitely stole it because it said money can buy taste or something like that, which I found quite apropos to my lifestyle.
I know. I wanted to pocket a coin, too, and I didn't get a chance to. That you could sell for some money on the black market, perhaps.
Yeah, that was definitely the coolest thing at the art fair. Although Carol Beauvais's presentation at the aforementioned Zwerner Gallery also looked quite chic.
Mm.
And there were some great little hidden nuggets. Casey Kaplan had a great Liam Gillick booth, kind of looking back at his career. And some other fun things, but it didn't feel like a major fair to me.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot more Europeans in town and on the floor. I just said it didn't feel major. The first hour, I was on the floor walking around a client, buying some things. It had that buzz. It had that energy of art fairs past, and that felt nice.
What was really cool was that, you know, even on Saturday, there were a lot of Europeans, a lot of people from Los Angeles who were still in town. You know, they were all at the Dia lunch. So people, you know, I think that when people come to New York now, I feel like they want to stay longer. because there's so much to do in New York and people have been traveling less. So that kind of made for a cool week because people didn't just drop in for 2 days. They stayed for, you know, like 8 or 9 days.
Yeah, I mean, I actually popped back to the fair on Friday. Oh, really? I had some bankers that, you know, or some traders actually, that were off a really hot week. And they were definitely down to spend some money on art. Mm-hmm. Not so much, but they wanted to come in kind of after work hours on Friday, so popped through. And it still had a nice breezy feeling. It's a shame there's no food inside, but the great part is downstairs in what I think is still a pretty cursed area of the Hudson Yards. You have the amazing Spanish market. What do they call it? Mercado?
Mercado Little Spain, you know, which was, of course, founded by Bethesda legend Jose Andres.
And like a little angel on this earth.
I know. He's more than just Bethesda's now. He belongs to the world. But, you know, he still lives down the street from my parents.
Oh, very cool. But that I had a couple of nice snacky snacks there throughout those 2 days that I was in attendance.
Yeah, let's talk about Mercado Little Spain, because we're not going to go back there for a year. So
100% not. Okay, I said, oh, I should come back here. And it's like, no, it's not going to happen.
Of course not.
So I actually had the same meal twice in a row on those 2 days.
Let's
and it was great each time. I had this this Vichy water, which is this very salty Spanish sparkling water.
Familiar. You think I don't know Vichy water, dude? Yo, I fucking love the Vichy water. Okay, moving on.
And then I had a Yaman and queso sandwich, but it comes in this big, it's a very skinny sandwich, but I mean, it's a good 18 to 20 inches long.
I got the same thing. With fucks.
Yeah, with a little kind of tomato water, kind of crushed tomato, panda tomato kind of style thing on it. Cheese.
Did you get some gazpacho?
I did.
It is so good. I could drink that by the gallon.
Well, you know, that's handy because they sell it by the half gallon there in kind of like resealable plastic, almost like we get at one of the juice shops. And yes, did I bring a little quart home? Yes, I did.
That is smart. That is real smart. How about I just go, instead of paying 10 grand to go to Malibu and hang out with some hippies, how about I just drink that juice all day, every day?
Yeah, it was real tasty.
That gazpacho.
Yeah, so that was a highlight for me. I'm glad I made it back there. But speaking of auctions, something that didn't go up in the room but was announced in the Sotheby's sales room, not during the Macalo sale, but a couple of evenings later, Thursday evening, during the, whatever they call it, the Now sale, I think. God, what a terrible, tragic name. Sotheby's announced that their car sales wing, I believe it's RM Sotheby's, they kind of bought a car auctioneer and did a little tie-up there, sold at auction the most expensive car ever, coming in at $143 million.
How is it possible that a car could be worth this much money?
Well, because it's one of only two in existence. It's a 1955 Mercedes-Benz 300 SLR. Very important, not an SL. That'll only be worth like $7.5-8 million. Because we've seen a flight to alternative assets throughout the pandemic.
Right, right.
Which is something we're going to speak to with our guest this week, who's coming from the watch game. But so, and there was just built up demands. Basically, the person who wanted to buy this, his advisor, and yes, just like there are advisors for art, there are advisors for cars. This Kidson company, I forget the guy's first name, basically went to Mercedes-Benz, Mercedes-Benz Dahmer, who owns both of the existing editions of this car, and convinced them to put it up for auction. It wasn't really a public auction, though. It was only open to about 10 people.
Interesting.
They had to be, you know, pre-selected by the auctioneer, obviously to show that they had funds to pay for it, but also that they were the kind of people that Mercedes would be happy to have owning this car because they want it to be publicly available for people to see and view.
Damn. Do you think contenders on the art side would be able to do that? Like, be like, I'm going to vet everyone who gets a paddle?
Honestly, I don't think so.
Yeah,
no.
That's wild.
And I'm not sure if you could actually do that in the United States. a variety of anti-competitive laws that might run afoul of. I mean, this thing is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful market, but it really resets the public price for the car market. Previously, I believe the highest price paid at auction publicly for a car was like something like $70 million. Supposedly, there's been a private transaction north of $75 million. Probably around $80 million that happened around the same year. These are both pre-pandemic. So this was a major thing. I think we will see this drip down into other aspects of the luxury good and car market for auctions. Because basically, if you're sitting on a whole bunch of cash right now, you're getting a negative like 8 to probably closer to 12% yield year over year right now. And the equities markets are fucking shitstorm. Don't even get me started on bonds. You can put into a nice hard asset like a fucking one of two edition of an almost 75-year-old automobile. Not a bad look. The history of this automobile, though, is a little bit troubling. So these crushed in the post-war era, this edition automobile in what became the F1, kind of precursor to the F1, but the early funding for basically where did all it come the technology
from? Where did it come from?
It came from the Reich, man. It was, yeah, it was all German industry. So, you know,
it's a Nazi car.
There's definitely an ick factor. I do have it on good information that it was purchased by a very well-known British industrialist, one of the richest men in the UK, and will be publicly available. And I think that name will probably drip out to the press soon.
What if this guy's son pulls like a Ferris Bueller thing and just like steals the car and starts driving it around London, like, and thinks his dad won't find out?
That could be possible. I mean, his son's more into the double-decker bus game, from what I understand. So,
sick.
But, you know, possible. and just, I should mention, as I'm talking about the history of the Mercedes-Benz company, I should note that they have promised, and the only reason they sold it was to put all the funding towards education and green education initiatives.
That's great. We love to see it.
What else, Nate? What else? Oh, I guess we should talk about, as we were kind of wrapping up last week, we were both going our separate ways, but then we both went to go see Alex Israel's incredible exhibition at, some gallery in Chelsea. It was absolutely, Green Neftali. It was he just keeps doing it. Like, just when you think it's cheesy, he brings it to amazing. This incredible, maybe 40-foot-long diorama that he built of iconic to him, in some cases iconic to the world, but mostly iconic to him, storefronts from the city of Los Angeles, mm-hmm. which is very much a city that is his muse, obviously harking back to every building on the Sunset Strip.
Of course.
Just an incredible, incredible feat of engineering. Is all this, like, basically it took him all of 2 years over the pandemic to construct this, as well as several new paintings. And it was a great show.
Really great show.
Unfortunately, it was a cursed dinner in my experience.
Hey, man, I enjoy Indochine. I think that the setup was a little off because they had too many RSVPs. What are you going to do?
Well, here's the thing. Let me tell the people the story. Nate had a great time, by the way. He loved it. This is all coming from me, Benjamin. They invite me to a dinner a little bit late, which is fine. I've been a big supporter of Alex's, but I've never, as far as I recall, purchased anything from the Green Neftali Gallery. And these dinners are really for the supporters of the gallery and the artist. And so late invitation, no problem. Very excited to go support Alex in his endeavor and celebrate with him. It was a murderer's row of people there. Show up, they have all the tables booked out on, was that Lafayette, outside Indochine. They have a great setup there, super fun, having some cocktails, some past little nibbles, and I start kind of hunting for the tables. I'm looking around. There's no real table list, and then someone says, oh, there's a table inside. So while there are about 45, 50 people, the main gallery dinner outside, there was a cursed table for eight, stuck, kind of scrammed into the middle of the restaurant, which was open for normal business, where, you know, it was kind of the kids and losers table, and that's where I was, and I was none too pleased.
I understand, but I had a great time.
We had a great time because I have to say we were sat with legendary art advisor, poster dealer, like high-end movie, you know, early Hollywood poster dealer, advocate for Las Vegas and all things mid-century modern, Ralph DeLuca.
Yeah, we talked Vegas.
Highly, highly engaging and smart individual. So that saved it for me, but it was a close call. I was pissed, but I'll get over it.
I mean, it was a wonderful dinner, wonderful show. What else did we do last week? Is there anything else going on?
I went to a lot of auctions, man. I bid on a lot of stuff. I bought a lot of artwork. Oh, we tangentially of down at JTT in the recently new opened space, in addition to their Anna Sophie Burger show, which opened a week or so ago, kind of on Friday last, they opened a small little jewel of a show, right?
Mm-hmm. In the back room of the one and only Sam McInnes. I haven't actually seen the show yet.
Oh, booby. It is so good. There is a painting of Nancy Reagan in the show.
I've seen images. It looks insane.
One of the more iconic paintings I've ever seen. There's also an amazing, almost like grotesque, almost Goya-esque crowd shot of from a baseball game, Texas Rangers game, which is incredible. Whole show is great. That gallery is just firing on all cylinders, so that was worth seeing. Also popped by Andrew Krebs, who has some great stuff up. Mm-hmm. I did the whole thing. Friend of the pod, Bruce Sherman, great ceramicist, has a show of some new work downstairs at Nickel's. There's lots of art up in New York, but man, I'm about to go on a crazy travel jag.
Tell me about it. I want to hear about the travel.
So obviously we got Labor Day weekend this weekend, or Memorial Day? Memorial Day.
It's Memorial Day.
Same fucking difference. Yeah. Memorial Day, so gonna head out east for a quick little family jaunt.
Fun.
Pretty excited to celebrate Harper Levine, friend of the pod, former guest.
I'm hoping to be there.
25th year anniversary dinner. Mm-hmm. That's gonna be pretty exceptional, so do that, and then mostly some family stuff. Then Sunday, I gotta figure out how to get into the city. Might be Blade time. In order to make a 5 p.m.
It's Blade time.
maybe in order to make a 5 p.m. flight to Mexico City to go hang out with the Moran Moran crew and install a show. I guess I should save who is in the show now, but I do want to...
We'll talk from Mexico.
Yeah, but I do want to let you know it is called A Form of Magic.
Great name. Love it. It's very Milk of Dreamsy.
Well, you know, we need magic right now. Mm-hmm. Art can't solve much. Maybe it can provide with some sort of spiritual healing.
So this is your first time in Mexico City in a few years, correct?
Yes, since just before the pandemic, March of 2020, I was there, February, March.
I remember that trip. I think I don't know if Mexico City has changed. We've changed. I don't know, if it'll be the same old Mexico City. But I mean, you're gonna eat all the tacos. You're gonna have all of the incredible food. What are you looking forward to doing in CDMX?
I'm looking forward to going to the Anthropological Museum.
Love it.
Seeing the galleries and eating a shit ton of tacos al pastor.
Mm-hmm. Just
in that
so
order.
Many.
Yeah,
so
in
many.
That order. And obviously installing the show. It's going to be a great show. Hanging out with Mills and his awesome crew down there. But let's reverse that. You know what? Number one on the list, tacos al pastor.
I mean, it's just the greatest fucking thing in the world just to eat tacos all day.
And I know I'm going to be installing and trying to get everything just right and make the show look as beautiful as possible. But there will definitely be a lunch at Contramar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's for the show. And then then that happens. I come back for a few days, and it's time to go to Zurich, Bubby.
Wild.
And we're not going to have you there. That's crazy
to
me.
No Switzerland for me. I'll have to let y'all just tear through Zurich and Basel and Menorca and fucking Hedra without me.
Yeah, it's gonna be a long trip. I think we'll save the Basel preview and rest of the travels for next week, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Lots to discuss.
We're gonna want to stay tuned. We have a pretty awesome guest coming up. You want to tell us about her, Nate?
Yeah, her name is Bryn Wallner. She is an expert on all things watches. She is the proprietor of the great, great site Dime Piece, which investigates ladies wearing watches over the years. It's one of my favorite things on the internet. Bryn is a real treasure.
Yeah, I can't wait to get to know her and talk to her coming up right
after this.
This. Welcome back to Nota Bene.
We are here from Union Square with an esteemed guest, the one and only Bryn Wallner. Bryn, welcome to Nota Bene. This is so fun.
Hi.
Hi, Bryn. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
I know your social media presence, but I don't think we've ever met in person.
Yeah, I feel like you're not as much of a Dime Square urchin as
as I am, certainly. The last few places I've seen you were on Sunday at the Balenciaga party. Saw you at friend of the pod Nomi Fry's birthday.
Oh right,
at Clandestino. Yep. Mm-hmm. I was at Clandestino again last night. Didn't see you. Who did I see? I saw
just you saw Ben Dietrich.
I did see Ben Dietrich.
I just saw him. He gave me some merch.
Oh nice! What cookies merch did you snag?
The camo basketball hat.
Love it!
Wow, I kind of wish I was into basketball just so I could listen to that podcast and wear their merch.
I mean, they're friends of the pod for sure.
FOP.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I mean, I listen to cookies because I actually care about basketball, unlike you, Ben.
Yeah, don't care at all, man.
But we're not here to talk about basketball. We're here to talk about watches.
Time pieces. The horticultural arts. That's what I said. That's the wrong word. How do you say it?
Horology.
Horological
arts.
I put the whore in horology.
Oh, wow.
Let's go.
I'm saving that one up. I feel like you've used that one before.
Definitely. Or I put the hoe in hodinky.
That one's really good.
Yeah.
Just incredible. So, yeah, we want to talk about your incredible multimedia empire that is Dime Piece.
But first, I want to know a little bit more about you because I don't know you. And I hear that you actually have, much like myself, a background in the auction game, but not in the watch auction game.
Yeah, that is true. Before even Auction World, I was in LA and I worked for a boutique creative agency and we did Coachella parties.
We love that.
South by Southwest.
Ah, that is great.
Art Basel.
Were you making money or just getting a lot of cred? What was a mixture of the two?
Well, it was my early 20s, so I was making early 20s bread.
Sick.
Enough to live comfortably in LA, I would say.
What hood did you live in LA at the time?
Well, first I moved to Venice Beach where my mom was living and I slept on her couch for a couple months. This was in 2012 when I graduated college. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Koreatown and my friend and I split an $800 a month shitty apartment.
Love Koreatown.
Were you
at the HMS Bounty every night?
Yeah. That was the vibe. Mm. But I also used my Lyft credit to go all around town.
Wow, you're a Lyft and an Uber girl?
Yeah, when Lyft had like the stupid pink mustache.
Oh no, the cursed mustache.
You had to sit in the front seat?
Yeah, and they gave you a fist bump.
They think we've forgotten about the mustache.
We haven't.
No.
People don't forget.
No.
No, but yeah, we were just zooming around. and then...
What a time.
What a time. Then I moved to West Hollywood in the most amazing two-bedroom. And it was like a Melrose Place style. It was like as Laurel Canyon started to like curve up.
Mm. Let's go.
It was only $1,600 a month for a two-bedroom with a pool and a huge living room.
I wish I still had my first Silver Lake apartment, which I paid in the year 2000, $900 split two ways.
Oh,
and I
wow.
wish I just hung on to that lease. It was so cute, like overlooking the reservoir.
Yeah,
like,
that place is like $4,000 now, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
If it hasn't been knocked down with
your
some like terrible mixed
Your Skid Row place
use.
Is still $900.
My Skid Row place.
They were dark days, Nate. They were dark days.
Oh, you have an LA pass too.
I have an LA pass.
Dark
yeah.
LA
oh.
pass.
I pulled up stakes in the dead of night though, like 15, 20 years ago.
The Great Escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I lived a few other places. I moved like every year. And then I moved to New York because I needed a little change and a new job. And I went to a really corporate job at Verizon Media Group.
Wow, the Verizon Media Group.
Talk about a chic business card to throw down. So did you work in one of the stores, like signing people up for phone
yeah,
calls?
Yeah. Can I interest you in a package? No, it was like, I worked for like a creative studio and we did branded content for HuffPost and TechCrunch and AOL.
Were you in the office right here?
Yeah, 770 Broadway. Mm-hmm. So we split it with like the J. Crew people and the Facebook people.
That's a strange office. I went in a few times because I interviewed for various jobs at the Huffington Post. That culminated with...
That seems like a bullet dodged right there.
I did get to have dinner at Ariana's apartment on Prince Street, which was quite fun. She invited Dustin Yellen also for some reason. Yeah.
That's a fucking nightmare blunt rotation, dude. Sorry. No, all respect to Ariana and Dustin, but no thanks. I'm good.
I'm all set.
I'm straight, man.
Yeah, wow. I kind of suppressed that memory, actually.
Damn, blacked it out.
So how do you go from doing whatever you just said you did for Verizon, which I didn't understand any of it?
Yeah, sorry. media bullshit. Well, they let me go because Verizon acquired all these brands, and then they let me go, which was iconic because I got a ton of severance.
Fun employment.
It was so... I hated that job anyway, and I just had like 3 months to do nothing. And my friend hit me up, and he's like, we're looking to hire... Or my friend's looking to hire somebody at Sotheby's on the editorial team. They purposefully don't want anybody with an art background, which I don't have. they just want like culturally adjacent stories. And I interviewed and I got the job and I was so excited because I thought it was such a step up. And like my grandpa had heard of it.
Oh, cute.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I got a job at Sotheby's. And he's like, that's big time.
Big time.
Yeah, I was really proud of that job, and it was so cool to see the art, and I got into watches at Sotheby's. I have never cared about watches. I literally never knew any watch brand besides Rolex. Like, I didn't know anything about them, but then the watches department was like, can you make some cute content for us? And I did, and I had to learn about them, and I kind of fell in love with them, and I also realized that there was a space that was left for women. Like, they don't talk about women in the watch world. And I was like, there's totally something here, right? Like, watch brands have so much money.
Mm-hmm.
So and then Sotheby's let me go on the day that New York shut down.
Wow.
Keep it classy, Patrick.
Yeah. Literally on the day that, like, people started to line up for, like, toilet paper at the stores, they let me go. And I quarantined in Florida for 3 months where my mom lived. And that's where I started Dime Piece, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Dime Piece. What a iconic fucking name that is. Yeah. It works on so many
levels.
Did you
have that in the back of your head? Like you just had that name and you're like, that's funny. That's good.
Well, actually, you know Ashwin?
Of course.
I started tweeting about timepieces like as a joke all the time. And I was like, damn, timepiece. Like somebody from like a TV show. He's like, dime piece. There's something there. Dime piece. Mm-hmm. And then it was just in my mind.
That's great.
But most
shout out Ash.
Shout out Ash. Nobody knows what dime piece is in the watch world. Like, Swiss people have never heard the term. They just think it's like this weird word.
Like, Swiss banker bros in Zurich are like, yo, check out that dime over there.
No, like, Swiss watch people. Oh, okay. Nobody know, and like, older people. So I have to, like, explain it. So
didn't dimes do a lot for the cultural understanding of what dime
means. I know. Well, it just makes you realize what a niche we're the bubble that we're living in, because nobody knows what I'm talking about except for like young people.
Except for 200 people that live down south of Canal Street.
Literally. Yeah.
And so you launched it in the middle of the pandemic. And I remember, because I'd been following you on Instagram before, I remember when you launched it, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And then it started to blow up a little bit, right?
Yeah, it started to blow up. Hodinkee started following me when I had like 500 followers.
And so it just started as an Instagram account,
It started as an Instagram in summer 2020. And I was just like, here's Rihanna in a Patek Philippe Nautilus. And then Hodinkee started following me, and then they reposted me. And then overnight, I had like a bunch of watch people in my DMs. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And I'm like, next thing you know, Harper's Bazaar is like, hey, can you be our monthly watch columnist? And I was like, oh, shit, I really need to learn about watches now.
Well, I mean, I know this kind of thing because my bro that works in Outworld, there are a whole bunch of like watch spotter Instagram accounts, and they're like super cheesed out.
Yeah.
They're, like, what some like football player from Manchester is like wearing, like, is Richard Mille. And it's like, you know, it has like the retail price. And,
yeah.
Like, but your whole vibe, not just the fact that you were highlighting ladies like rocking watches, but also just the way that you wrote about them was like super breezy, like knowledgeable, but like really about them as what their cultural meaning was, not just like what the fuck they cost kind of thing.
Yeah. It's so boring.
So boring. So boring.
I'm just like, I need some context here.
But like watch dorks, like much like other kind of like people that are like hyper into a specific thing, especially at auction houses. I'm not sure at Sotheby's, but I know like the dudes that worked at Phillips, like they were so knowledgeable and so down to share like why these things turned them on. And it wasn't because they were like, this is so expensive. It would be like this weird like, oh, this number is this specific style and it was only made, you know, in these 4 years, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Now I get it.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm obsessed with the auction people.
Yeah.
They know their stuff.
So what was your crash course for all things watches like? You know, what did you get into first? When did it start to click, I guess?
Well, I mean, it was such a brand new world. So I'd be like writing, or I'd be editing articles about like the GOAT watches. We did a series for Sotheby's. And I was like, how to pronounce Audemars Piguet. Like, it was like so 101. But really, I learned a lot from kind of looking in like TVs and movies. And then I would take screenshots and ask my like watchy friends, like, what is this? So I use culture as the gateway. But then catch me on a Wednesday night watching a YouTube video. What's the difference between an automatic and a quartz movement? Like really nerdy videos that...
I have no idea.
Hey, Bryn, what's the difference?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
Like the dummies version, yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, quartz is a battery. And it was invented by the Japanese. Seiko popularized it in the mainstream. And quartz implies there's no movement in there, and so it's a lot cheaper to make, and it made watches way more accessible, and you only have to service them like every 2 years and they keep running. So the Cartier watch that I'm wearing right now is quartz ran.
Shout out Cartier. Looks which, great.
Thank
what,
you.
What kind of watch is that?
It's a Cartier Tank Française.
Ooh.
And I got it last year. It was my first luxury watch. Liana did a Vogue shopping story on
it. I recall. Yeah. Very cool.
Did you acquire it new or is it a secondhand piece?
It's new because for my first watch, I mean, this is a $3,400 watch, to be completely transparent about the price, which is pretty affordable in the grand scheme of the watch world. So it's just a steel watch. I'm like, you know what? I'll get it new. I'll get the red box and the princess treatment at Cartier. They give you like a macarons and little Cartier champagne.
Wow. Cartier branded champagne.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they have their own, what do you call it?
House.
Where's wine made?
It's a cuvée or something?
I don't know.
They have their own vineyard?
Vineyard.
That's it.
I'm sober, by the way. Yeah, anyway, so that's quartz, and then let's get back to quartz versus automatic, because I know everybody really wants
everyone
to know.
People are just like waiting, like fast-forwarding through this.
They're like, Cartier. Automatic means there's a movement inside, and it's made by these craftsmen, and it's like this really intricate thing, and you have to wear your watch because it keeps, like, your body synergizes with the movement and keeps it running, and it's beautiful, and that's why watches are so expensive.
Oh, that's actually cool. I didn't know that it, like, it... your body by moving your arm around, it winds itself.
If it's an automatic movement versus a mechanical, I actually don't know the difference between those two. I wonder what yours is, actually.
Yeah, I'm wearing a watch that I've never discussed on this podcast before because I know nothing about watches.
Was it gifted or something?
It was a gift from my wife. Uh-huh. I think she had it. It might have been a family watch, and she got it just restored and fixed up. And I think it looks great, but I haven't done a deep dive on what it actually is. It's Swiss made, apparently.
For those of you who can't see, it's like a men's dress watch. Mm-hmm. It's nice gold. And thinny and skinny and a nice leather band.
And it looks fab.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bryn. That's a very high compliment.
Well, I want to come back to Dime Piece, but we'll use this as a way to talk about the fact that, so like in the art world, what I've noticed is every dude, and I unfortunately fall into this, like you do your first, in the commercial side of the world, you do your first big deal, one of your first big deals, and like you start getting a couple of 5-figure wire transfers, and everyone goes out and gets the same cheesy stainless steel a Rolex, not even a Day-Date, just a Datejust wallet. Mm-hmm. Like every dude has it in their like late 20s, mm-hmm. early 30s. It's such a fail, in my opinion. I've got mine at Heritage Auction House. It's sitting in my safe. I have no idea what I'll do with it.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of all my other colleagues. What is a great, for a man, you think like a great first watch?
Mm.
It's like spendy, not like a, you know, like $5,000 and up, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think vintage watches are a good way to go. Like everybody's talking about like the Audemars Piguet Royal Oak or something, but you'll find Audemars Piguets from the 70s that are like $5,000 maybe, and they're really cool, or like a Patek Philippe Ellipse. Like I think dress watches like this are going to make a comeback, and nobody really cares about them, and they're super undervalued. I think
dress watches are super hot.
Yeah, like, and you could style them, but like you said, everybody goes for like the steel sports
Everyone goes for
watch.
The Rolex. Like, yeah. You know.
And if you want to be a little different and save a little money, go for vintage.
And especially like, obviously your thing popped off during the pandemic and the watch market in general, like, like dudes and watches, like they're taking all that PPP money and like just blowing it online. The prices, the prices of things, like went crazy. Like I try not to be into it cause it's a little bit of a, just a little cheesy for like dudes to be into watches, but I love the fact, I love ladies rocking a cool looking watch.
Yeah,
I think it is such like a statement. It's like strong. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. There's something like a little bit different than a guy. I feel like guys are cheesy. When did you first start like noticing other ladies' watches? Like when do you go from like, oh, watches are kind of cool to like being like, oh, that's cool. She has that on, or celebrities or people on the subway, whatever.
I think that was like the beginning of it. Like I would be on the subway and I would see somebody wearing a watch. I'd be like, what's that? Or I'd be watching. I rewatched The Parent Trap and the evil stepmom figure wears a Cartier pendant.
I kind of remember her watch, actually, now that you think about it. I mean, I don't know. There's something about her. She had this very sort of great, like, evil stepmom look.
Yeah.
Like, she looked rich. Like, like she looked, like, kind of hot.
She was so hot.
Yeah. You know, and, like, the watch did it. Like, I think watches make you look rich and hot.
They do.
You know?
I mean, hello. Look what I mean, do I look rich and hot or do I look rich and hot?
Not gonna lie.
Glow up.
One thing I want to know is like, are there like certain watches that are like obviously really fancy but also a little niche? And like when you see a celebrity wearing one, you're like, oh, damn. Like they're into that?
Yeah.
Like that's cool. Like I don't know what the equivalent would be, but like, I don't know. Like, Balenciaga is a little edgy, you know.
So
it's like, you know, certain celebs are into that rather than like Dolce. You know, like, is there a watch that's like kind of confers some kind of like inness or like you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, I think it's the cover story of GQ, Bad Bunny.
Mm-hmm. Shot by Roe Etheridge.
Uh huh. And in that editorial spread, Bad Bunny is wearing a vintage Patek Philippe, and I looked in the little credits and it was like watch his own, and I was like,
oh damn, interesting,
weird. And it's little and it's leather strap and it's vintage, and I'm like, somebody knows what they're doing that, or he knows what he's doing, that he picked that out.
So you think that was him and not like Will Welch just like hooking him up with some sick
watches? Well, it says watch his own.
Yeah, watch his own. Yeah. I love when you see that for anything in that I fashion know. Spread.
I love it so
like,
much. You
know, either stylist zone or the actor's zone. You're like, oh, nice. But his watch, I mean, I was looking at the image that you posted. Like, it's tiny. It's almost tiny. Looks like a lady's size watch.
I think
on
it
his
is
wrist.
A lady's watch.
And I thought that was chic. I don't think I could pull it off, but it's like, super chic.
I'm dying to see more men wear ladies' watches. And like Drake, I mean, he has everything, including that, like, crazy Richard Mille sex watch. You know which one I'm talking about?
I do, actually, yeah.
I don't even know. Like, it says, like, pussy on it or something.
Oh, my God.
If you have to say it.
Like, I know. Yeah. God.
Really trying to telegraph something, bro.
I know. That's, like, the watch equivalent of those, like, horrible cause sculptures he has in his Toronto house.
Yeah.
Remember that? You know?
I think there's a direct connection between between cause editions and Richard Mille watches.
1,000%. Like,
can we talk about how bad these watches are for a second?
I mean, I have grown to appreciate them.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because when you try them on, they are light as a feather, listener. Light as a feather, wow. And it's just like the level of technology and the movement, like that. They get so hardcore with it, and I also just love how ridiculously expensive they are. Like, what?
I have a client that just bought one, and he was so proud to like shoot me a shot of his wrist and send it to me. I mean, he's one of my favorite people, love him to death. But I was like, dude, bro, what are you doing? And why aren't you spending that on pictures?
Also, yeah, right. You're asking for
where's
it?
My 10%?
Yeah,
but you know, like he also like he likes supercars. Yeah. Like it fits in with his personality.
But like you can't wear that out, really. Like you're gonna get robbed. Watch theft is on the rise.
I mean, people are just shooting other people in the subway. Like, if I'm wearing a watch, like, that's the main reason why I would be one, horrified of losing it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I'm like, put my wedding ring down and like, I lose it like 30 seconds later. I lose everything. Like, you know, so like.
But I don't know. I've always found them cheesy. I like that you're countering that and be like, no, they're actually kind of cool.
I mean, I've seen them so much and I'm like, oh, that looks horrible. Like, it's like the knee jerk reaction is to hate it if you're like normal. But I have come around for some reason. And yeah, I don't know. What were we talking about?
Who knows? I have a question. If I wanted to buy a lady's watch right now, perhaps for my wife, or perhaps for Nate wants to buy a watch for his wife. She's going through a major life event soon. Like, what's a cool lady's watch right now?
Maybe on the cheaper side also.
I mean, this watch you can find for like $2,000.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I mean, you can't go wrong with Cartier, a little tanky tank.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I also don't mind a date just for a woman, a little teeny tiny one.
I've always really liked a men's date just. A two-tone, like golden steel.
Yeah.
I think is hot.
For sure. But if you need any help, I got you.
Okay.
I got guys.
Well, I'm like an art advisor. Like, people pay me to help them select their art.
Uh-huh.
Does that exist outside of like retailers and dealers for watches?
Well, I'm kind of doing that for a lot of people. Like, they're like, what should I wear? And I help them pick it and then I'll help them source it. And I kind of envision myself sitting pretty on 47th Street, like lording over like the slime lord watch dealers.
I love that for you. I absolutely love that for you. Because it is kind of I won't say a shady business, but a kind of shady business. Like, especially vintage and used watches.
Yeah.
And like, people probably shouldn't go in blind if they haven't really educated themselves.
Yeah. You need a middleman.
Yeah.
Got to get your 10%, bro.
Gotta
or
get,
more.
Gotta I mean, get
you
know,
it. You do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you went from doing the Instagram to like now you're retailing some watches too in association with someone else. I forget what it's called, which was cool.
Yeah.
But you've also been getting, it seems like you're going on some junkets as of late.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, were you just in the heart of Switzerland, watch land of the world?
Yes, I went to Watches and Wonders, which is the biggest watch trade show in the world. And it was insane.
So you've been to like Basel, Miami, right?
I have been to Basel, Miami.
So like, I've always like wondered, like, are watch fairs like art fairs, or like, are do all the watch people like turn up at night? Like,
oh, people turn up. Yeah. I mean, the scale of it, it's like this huge like exposition space, the size of like multiple airport hangars, and each brand has their own essentially their own mansion that they build up for just a couple days. And like Rolex's space was like multiple floors, and they have like a check-in area, and they have like custom hardwood floors, and these like beautiful women in head-to-toe cashmere checking you in, and like fresh flowers every day. It's like the most luxurious thing for like literally a week, and then they just take it all away.
And wow. Is the audience consumers for this? Like,
so it's invite only.
Love that.
I know. It's press and it's dealers. Mm-hmm. And then I guess some consumers, maybe like really high net worth. I don't know. But a lot of journalists, a lot of dealers. And I got invited, and it's all expenses paid.
Wow.
They like, as a journalist, they put you up at a hotel.
We're talking live flat or?
We're talking, huh? Okay. Live flat, because I got a brand to fly me out because I moderated a discussion panel, because they have little,
that's
like
how we do. Nate knows that hustle.
You know the vibe.
Oh yeah. I'm not allowed to take press trips anymore, but I have in the past.
Oh my God, you're not allowed.
Conde Nast, no.
Oh no. It's okay. Press trips are the best.
I've been on my fair share of them.
Yeah, true. I bet you've seen the world.
He has. He even remembers some of it.
Yeah. Yeah, Geneva was crazy. Have you guys been to Geneva?
I have been to Geneva. Mostly to the Freeport, but you know, to the rest of it's nice too.
Yeah.
I've checked out Geneva. There's, you know, I've been to the Gagosian there, mm-hmm. right?
It's really a different kind of wealth, man. It's a quiet wealth.
Yeah.
It's even quieter than Zurich wealth, which really is already pretty sleepy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful, you know. Huh? You got the lake there, right?
Lake that is just lake? Like surrounded by all the watch logos.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was gagging over.
I mean, it's just like, yeah, it's like a watch themed city, really,
yeah, you know? It's I was in hog heaven.
Did you pick up anything for yourself over there?
No, a little something. I'm like, I don't have any business. I mean, I've gotten my collection has just grown I've only had this watch since a year ago. Now I have a Rolex, and then I got my dad's Rolex.
Damn.
Growing up, did your father wear a watch?
He wore it when I was really little, and then he stopped wearing it, and he started wearing these like crazy like sports watches, like Suunto, which is like just like really technical, almost like smart watches. So I didn't have like daddy's collection. Okay. I was just so inspired by his Patek.
He wasn't taking care of it for the next generation.
No, so no, right? No. But I did get his the Rolex that he got for graduating law school, and it has his initials engraved on it. So it's really special. I'm like, hell yeah.
That's really sweet. I like that.
I know. I'm like, because I also have a brother too, and it could have easily gone to the man in the family. But you know.
That's cool.
Being American, I have a watch business. So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I earned that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're getting invited to the top watch fairs in the world, I mean, you've gone pretty mainstream. You've gone pretty legit, right?
Yeah. I was like, I think I made it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the angle that I'm taking right now, it's like I'm kind of luxuriating in like the influencerness of it, like the press trips and kind of the low stakes writing and, you know, getting gifted things. And I want Dimepiece to grow and be a more robust kind of media experience and like get my girl boss on. But for right now, I'm like really loving like learning and exploring. And you know, I'm going to Madrid next week with Omega.
So weren't you just in Paris like two days ago?
Just in Paris. And then I'm je vais à Madrid, baby.
Wow. Wow.
And then I go back to Paris for another press trip in June.
Sick.
Yeah.
Oh, it's working. Whatever you're doing, it's working.
I know. I know. I know. As long as I just keep making money throughout this. Because I feel like a lot of watch media people are like totally... like they're not making money, but it seems like they live such a luxurious life because they got the lie flat and they've got the watches.
Yeah, welcome to the luxury adjacent world, man. Tell me about it.
It's kind of crazy.
You can't try and live your clients' lifestyles. That's a key thing. It's a little easy to get to get caught up like Mr. Inigo Philbrick.
Right. Yeah. Oh, poor Inigo.
I wanted to show you some pictures of some notable art dealers in the New York art ecosystem. If I can figure out how this works, maybe.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, working. Can you see? Okay. All right. Let's see here.
Ooh, look at her little dime piece.
This is Amy Cappellazzo. Oh. This is a publicity photo, I think, taken when she and Alan started whatever their company was
again,
called.
Again, the pictures by Roe Etheridge.
Again. Okay. Damn, he's really around the block.
He really is.
We should have Roe on.
Yeah.
Can you tell what it is from this? It's super grainy, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's a gold Rolex Daytona.
Of course, yeah.
That's so hot.
Yeah, I mean, she... Oh, wow. It's pure power on her. We stan.
Amy, you hear that, Amy?
I wonder if it's vintage or if it's new. And if it's new, she must have known somebody at Rolex. Because you're like on year-long wait list to get that.
Really?
Now. Well, that's the thing. Much like art, you can't just, and clients have explained to me, they can't just roll in and get a watch.
Oh, no.
Only because they've been really good customers over like 10 years do they get offered hard-to-get things.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Walk into any Rolex store in the world and it's empty. All the watches there are for exhibition only.
Really?
Yeah, except for like... some little ladies watch with like a bunch of diamonds and like a pink dial. But like you cannot buy this new unless you're like a VIP.
So they really do function like art galleries. Like it's
yeah,
just
and
there.
They could make more. They choose not to.
Yeah.
And Rolex, at least, and I just learned this a couple weeks ago, is actually owned by a nonprofit foundation
really?
Of some sort. Yeah.
Damn.
I did not know that.
Oh, I wish I had that. I wish I'd actually done the real research that could tell the people about it, but this is true.
I should know this.
I figured that I could just walk into a watch store and buy a watch. It's not the case.
It depends. You can walk into Cartier and buy this, but you got to make a little appointment.
Mm-hmm. No, I figured the appointment was
No, but that Rolex you can't buy now.
Well, that's one of the reasons they saw such like a huge pop in the price of things on the secondary market during the pandemic.
She could sell this for like, I don't know. $50,000 probably, but it retails at like 15.
She's okay. She's a girl boss.
It's a keeper.
Wow.
And I wish this wasn't so grainy. This is about girl bosses. Barbara Gladstone.
Barbara Gladstone is wearing the dime piece.
Who is that?
She is a gallery owner. She has galleries in Chelsea and Brussels.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's like a powerful woman dating back to the 80s, like a real badass, as this picture, I think, conveys pretty well. Yeah, probably not to her face so much.
No. She looks sick. I mean, that's a Rolex again.
Yeah, you can't really see what it is. Maybe more so there, but probably not.
I think it's a day date.
It looks like a day date, but it looks like it has a black dial with maybe rose gold again.
Yeah,
I
don't know if it's just the tone, but also rose gold. Ugh, these watch brands love rose gold.
It feels very 3 to 5 years ago to me.
Yeah, I mean, I just think of like the iPhone.
Right.
You know?
The iPhone probably killed it, actually.
Yeah. But all the new novelties at Watches and Wonders, they don't even have yellow gold, period.
Wow.
But
it's
they'll
just
be
so
like,
played out.
They're like, here's our gold, and it's rose gold. And I'm like, what?
That's wild.
I'm still confused by white gold.
Oh my God, I love white gold. It's the best flex.
So it's gold, but it's not yellow. Like it looks like stainless if you're me and don't know.
Which is why it's cool because
it's super chic.
Because you know that it's gold. And you know that it's like three times the amount of steel, but everybody else thinks it's steel. It's like a very subtle flex.
Quick digression. There used to be this dealer who's actually I met because he was very, very good friends with Barbara Gladstone.
Huh.
European guy, kind of looked like a vampire, don't know his name. And this is probably 10 years ago. He's around a lot. And Barbara used to rock one of these rings that he had made and was quite fashionable for a period. It looked totally seamless from the outside, but if you shook it, it kind of rattled a little bit because there were loose diamonds inside
Whoa.
It. You couldn't see the diamonds. You just knew they were there.
That's
crazy.
That's actually bonkers.
Bonkers good. So if a listener could remind me who that jeweler is,
oh
I want to say
God.
Johnny or something, but that probably isn't
So you basically are just like, look at this watch that you can't see any diamonds. I'm going to shake it. And you hear the diamonds that
this
are
ring.
In my watch.
Yeah. Oh my and you know how many carats and what the clarity
You're
was.
Just scratching up the diamonds.
And it wasn't like
in
a
there.
Couple of little chips or anything. There would like there'd be like diamonds
oh
in there.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's
I think that's
such
to die
a good
for.
Flex.
This is Mary Boone. I'm not sure when this photo is dated, but I think a few years ago, probably.
Okay.
Well, she
based on her
based on that she wasn't in prison.
Yeah, this is not in federal prison, this photograph. And it looks can you tell what that is? It's a really interesting looking watch.
I wanna say it's like a vintage. It could be like a vintage Patek or a vintage Cartier, Boucheron or whatever. I don't know. I can't tell from the pic, but it's really cool.
To
I
be
love
clear,
that.
I'm showing her like super grainy, like zoomed in photographs.
Also, and it looks like it's like it could be just a chain bracelet, but there's a watch.
Interesting.
Like from far away, it could just be like a chain, but it's actually a watch.
Like impractical, but I really like the little rings that have a pop-up cover that have watches in them sometimes.
Yeah. Those are cool. Yeah.
All right. So those are some of the ladies I found.
Okay.
The guys, it's funny. So I was able to, let me find Larry. We should always start with Larry.
Always start with Larry.
If I can find the image I had up. Oh, no. This is like pretty obvious at Daytona.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Black dial.
Uh-huh.
Pretty classic.
Steel, like master, sports watch. Yeah, like
kind of classic Master of the Universe.
It's like, you know, the sleeve is just so pushed up so you mm-hmm. can see it.
I mean, Larry looks great there.
Well, here's the thing. I noticed. I know David Zwirner wears a watch in all of his photos. His hands are in his pocket,
uh-huh.
or his sleeves are cut in such a way that it is not like a flashy like thing.
Love that.
Yeah, yeah. So there is no big difference. Ivan Wirth. picture's no good here. But he actually speaks in some press about his love of vintage Rolexes.
Oh, he does.
Well, Ivan Wirth is, of course, a Swiss man.
He's a Swiss man.
Oh.
And his his wife is the daughter of a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess every year she gives him a vintage Rolex for his birthday.
Oh.
Really? Every year?
That's what I believe it was in...
Wouldn't she be like, you know what? I'll switch it up this year.
Wasn't How to Spend It, but in one of those types of things. There's an interview with him that I now can't find where he talks about this. The Rob Report. Excuse me.
Oh my God. Course. I love the Rob Report.
Love the Rob Report.
God.
Yesterday, I needed to figure out, I needed to do some research on a building in Miami that built a elevator specifically for very expensive cars.
Oh, man.
And I read about it in the Rob Report.
Wow.
Is that different from the building in Chelsea that has an elevator specifically for cars?
This is for car collectors.
Oh.
The building itself.
Wait, I think I saw that online
mm-hmm.
in Miami somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems incredibly sick.
Yeah.
And a little tragic.
if you're into that.
In a city that's rapidly being subsumed by the oceans.
Yeah.
Right.
And by the tech community.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what is that? Those are all the pictures I could find online.
I love that. Harder. What a fun exercise.
We try and do a tiny bit of research here. It doesn't really always, you know.
Yeah.
I'm big on vision, I'm kind of short on follow through.
Oh.
what else is next for Dimepiece?
Well, you know, I just want to make the website bigger. I mean, do people even go on websites, though?
What's a website?
Anymore?
Right.
Throwing Fits said that Dimepiece, my vision for Dimepiece is hodinky for people who fuck. Yeah. I mean, just like educate people on watches, kind of like help guide their hand if they're shopping.
And you have like a nice community now.
I have a great community.
Of women that kind of like, you know, write into you. Yeah. And, right?
Yeah. And men too.
Can you say any high profile fans of Dimepiece? Can you?
Yeah.
Like,
Well, lately, Russell Simmons' daughter has been really into Dimepiece.
Okay, that's great.
She goes to Harvard, and I'm like, I'll come up to Harvard and interview you.
Wow.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
She like comments on all my posts. It's so sweet. And
oh, I love that.
Yeah. But I mean, I have
intern
like,
for summer 2022, maybe?
Yeah, totally.
I'm like, so... I don't know. Who else? There are like a lot of people I got like... Jesus, nice.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of people will follow me, but they don't engage with the content at all. So I don't even remember.
But you know they're watching. They're looking at stories.
Smash that like button, people.
Smash that like button. You can give me a little heart emoji
mm-hmm.
every now and then.
Would you ever open up a storefront, perhaps in Dime Square?
Yeah, but I would need big security.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little
big guy named Bruce.
Right.
Yeah. I had a little pop up. You know, do you know what Wim Golf is?
I don't think so.
I'm preppy, but that sounds even preppier than I am.
Well, it's like these two cool guys and they like started a little cute golf company and they took over a space in Dime Square and they like covered the floor with AstroTurf to make a little putting green. I mean, it's just genius to disrupt like really rich white spaces because mm-hmm. there's like always going to be money there. Anyway, I had a little birthday party and I sold watches there for a couple hours.
You told me about it. I meant to stop by and I was too crazy busy.
It's okay. It was really fun. Nobody bought a watch, but it was really fun to have people try on watches because you really have to try before you buy
because mm-hmm.
most people have no idea what they're looking for. But yeah, I would love to have a storefront.
I can see you being amazing to go in and like be like, I don't know, what do I want?
Yeah.
And just like I feel like you have that kind of thing where you could just like feel someone out like, oh, this is the kind of watch for you.
Yeah. I like read their aura.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I can't wait for that shop. I can't wait to hire you as my personal watch consultant. Mm-hmm. I was going to go through some watches I was looking at, but like now that I know that that's like your business, like I'm not going to waste your time.
Yeah, I'm going to hash it out for free. I'll invoice you after.
Perfect.
Your watch. I mean, come on.
That's how we do it.
So I used to, like, as I said, I think before we came on, like I definitely got caught up in like buying low-end men's watches like a few years ago when I started making money. And they were all kind of cheesy. And then my son gave this to me for my birthday. It's a Swatch. And it's the only watch when I'm hanging out with people that has ever gotten commented on.
Okay.
Especially when I'm around like dudes that have like real watch collections and like real, like, you know, have a different kind of budget than I do. They're like, oh, what is that? That thing's so cool.
Yeah.
And it actually is a talking point. There's a great art collector in New York, Peter Krause. Jill and Peter Krause is a couple. They have like a private collection upstate. He was a big banker. They're on the boards of every museum. And he has a collection. It must be like hundreds of Swatches. And he's like a legit master of the universe. And he's been doing it since the 80s. I'm always like, that's kind of cool. I didn't get it before, but now I kind of get it. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
I love
that's
that.
Cool. That's great.
You have all his junior bankers get their first bonus and go get a fancy watch. He's like, nah, I'm good at the Swatch, man.
That's sick, honestly.
I mean, some of those like vintage Swatches must be worth something, right?
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
Like limited edition ones, city edition. I just bought a Swatch in Paris, actually.
Oh, great.
Which it's like, why would you buy a Swatch in Paris? But it was so little and cute, and I wanted to buy it. And I did. Swatches are great. I love yours.
I like my watch.
NASA.
It's not by Tom Sachs.
I was just about to ask.
Yeah, that's what everyone asks.
It would be scribbled on there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't. I fuck with Tom Sachs, but I wouldn't wear a watch by him.
Yeah.
Or sneakers. All right. That's all I got. Nate, did I miss anything?
I think we got it all. Bryn, thank you so much for coming on Nota Bene. This is really a treat.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for making the world more interesting. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
You everyone, too. Check out Dime Piece if you're not a fan. Smash that follow button. Maybe press the like button too.
Gently.
Gently. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Nota Bene. Out.